goes on when I'm joined by another podcast host here on Could It Be? And today I'm joined by the lovely Deb. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, thank
you. This is weird. I was just saying it's so weird because I'm not used to being interviewed. I'm usually on the other side.
Ah! Yeah, swapped sides of the desk today. So let's start by telling us a little bit about who you are and where you're joining us from today.
I'm joining from Manchester in the UK, and the sun is shining. It doesn't usually shine here that much. It usually rains. But I am a radio presenter in the UK. I work on a station called Greatest Hits Radio. I've got two boys, and my journey with breast implants was 6 months long. So I was just saying to you a little while ago that, I remember it quite well, because basically they went in January 2022 and they came out on the 31st of July.
So we're nearing your explant anniversary at the moment, at the time of recording this.
It's flown by as well. I don't know about you, but I just feel like time is going so quickly. It's as if the planet is spinning faster or something. What's going on?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I remember looking back at my 1 year, and I didn't do too much for it because it was like, it did go so fast, but I didn't really have much of a connection to the anniversary date. Like, I didn't feel this emotional connection to it. It was more just like, look at everything I've done in the last 12 months. Like, how cool is that? And that's what it was for me. But yeah, happy anniversary for the 31st of July.
Thanks. Well, I was thinking that on the Heal Is Real podcast Instagram page, I was going to celebrate it in some way, but I only posted something 6 months ago on the implant anniversary, so it feels like 5 minutes ago. I'll be like, all right, shut up, stop going on about it.
So you've just mentioned your podcast, which is how we met. So that's the Heal Is Real. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I suppose in some ways it's similar to your podcast, because we do speak to ladies predominantly in the UK, to be honest, who have been through experiences with breast implant illness. But we do also speak to some surgeons as well, and they're quite hard to get hold of to come on and talk about the subject, as you can imagine. My explant surgeon came on, Jed, who is lovely, and we had David Floyd, who's another big, he's a well-respected surgeon in the UK. So yeah, we try and have a few chats with some of the experts to find out their thoughts as well. And I do believe that there are more and more experts coming out, or supposed experts, but equally there are a lot of surgeons that are still very reluctant to talk about it. There's one surgeon here in the UK who has talked about a lot on the Facebook group, and I think he's, in fact, I'll say his name, Guy Stern. He seems to be the one that has the huge waiting list and everyone goes to from the UK. And I've spoken to him on Messenger a couple of times, and he is obviously totally on board with BII. He's seen so many cases now, but as far as he's kind of putting his neck on the line, I suppose. So his view on it is that he wants to help with the research, and he's doing things in the background rather than coming onto podcasts and shouting about it. He wants to wait for the right time to do that, which I suppose is fair enough.
Yeah, that's absolutely understandable. And I guess it's similar there, where we don't have an actual diagnosis for it yet. It's not a recognized diagnosable medical condition. So the specialists need to be careful about, you know, what they say and where they say it, I guess.
Yeah, and also we talk about this on the pod, the fact we don't really like the fact that it's called breast implant illness, because we think that that kind of insinuates it's something that you get or you don't get, whereas it's a systemic reaction and you get it on different levels. You get it to the point where it's so bad that you have to have them out, as with most of us. But you can also, I've got loads of friends that I know have got symptoms and it's quite clear it's their implants, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a professor here in Australia who does he's doing a study on it, and he refers to it as systemic symptoms of breast implants. So interesting that you say that.
So my 6 month long journey, as I was saying to you before we came on, I do remember, I have got a very poor memory, but I do remember this quite well because it's fairly traumatic, you know, from start to finish, even from beforehand, actually, the actual decision to have them in, that was quite a traumatic
time. Well, tell us about that.
So I've always had small boobs, so, and now I have small boobs again. I was listening to Cheyenne's episode this morning where you both come out of this with boobs, and I'm not one of those. I have small boobs. Although Victoria's Secret reckon I'm a 32C, but one of the other department stores here says I'm a 34A, so I'm not quite sure how that's worked out. I just shop at Victoria's Secret now. So
there you go.
I'm a 32C, everyone.
Yeah.
But as I was growing up, I kind of just accepted it. I've got no boobs. That's fine. I would like to have bigger boobs, but I don't want to have anything inside my body. That was my thought process throughout my whole life, really. I mean, I'm 46. I forget. I'm that old. I forget. I'm 46 now. So, and this is one thing I always feel ridiculous with our podcast when we speak to ladies, because 9 times out of 10, the ladies were very young when they had the implants put in, and they always say, I didn't know any better. And I'm like, oh, well, I was 45 when I had mine put in, and I absolutely should have known better. I think my friend became an earworm. She was the same size as me, and she kept sending me videos of celebrities and people that had these mini boob jobs, and oh my God, aren't they great, and maybe we should do it. And I was always the one saying, oh no, I don't think it's for me. And then something happened in COVID. I think it was a combination of a few things, to be honest. I think I stopped working, and then you just concentrate on other things, looking in the mirror, thinking, maybe it's now or never. I had a few comments. I work in radio, so it is, of course, predominantly male. And I went out on a dinner with some friends, and I was wearing like a shirt dress with a few buttons undone. And I was stood at the table, kind of bending over, speaking to someone. And one of my friends said, oh, I was going to say I could see your tits then, Deb, but then I remembered you haven't got any.
Oh, man.
And he's a good friend of mine, just trying to be funny, as people in radio try and be funny all the time. I'm probably trying now. So there was that. I remember sitting in the garden sunbathing with my parents, and we got onto the subject of boobs, and I said to my dad, well, I obviously haven't got mum's chest, so I've obviously got nan's chest. And my dad said, oh, no, she had bigger boobs than you. It's like, oh, okay. And then there was a video one Christmas where my boys got a VR headset, and there's a video of me playing Beat Saber, which I love, by the way, on the VR headset. But in the video, I was wearing a shirt and trousers, and I thought, you look like an ironing board. There literally is nothing of you. So I think I then started researching surgeons and getting on to kind of thinking about, right, okay, maybe I'll do it. And it actually got round to the point where I found a surgeon that I wanted based on the reviews. I now know that they pounce on you for reviews, don't they? And I think that they can decide which ones they put on as well. So I don't think negative reviews can necessarily get online.
Or they're down the bottom, I think. Sometimes you've got to really push to find them. Yeah.
So I found a surgeon, and he was in the posh part of Manchester, so must be good. I don't live in the posh part. And I booked in, and I had lots of chats with his PA, who was lovely, but we'll get on to that later. And she was very, I said that I'd read some stuff online. So this is where we get into the fact that I did read a little bit about breast implant illness online. Okay. I didn't join any groups or anything like that. I'd read a little bit about it. And she said, oh, we've never had anybody back with anything to do with breast implant illness. It's so rare. It won't happen. So I booked in, and I think it was in 2020, at some point in 2020, and then I chickened out and cancelled it. So no, I'm not doing it. I don't want to do it. I don't, because my thought process, I think, always was, my boobs are tiny, but I don't mind them when I'm naked. I think they look all right, actually. I just would like to look better in clothes. I would like clothes to fit me better than they do, rather than putting something on and there being a big gapy bit, as there always was and is again. I chickened out of it, and then a year and a half happened or something, and the earworm got back in. My friend was still on sending me photos of these boobs, and I called her and I said, I'm thinking about doing it again. Now, she doesn't live necessarily that close to me. She lives in Yorkshire. It takes over an hour to get to her house. And because of COVID, I hadn't seen her for quite a while. And she said, I've done it, but I didn't want to tell you because I thought that you'd talk me out of it. Now, we were due to see each other the week after. We were going with another friend to a spa. And I said, right, okay. I can't believe you didn't tell me. And so we met up the following week. And it was then that I saw her and they looked great. And she let me cop a feel, had a feel.
As you do with new breast implants. I did the same.
Yeah. And of course, throughout that weekend, she was parading around in her bikini looking great. And I felt like a 12-year-old boy. And so I think for me, that kind of was the catalyst to me saying, right, okay, I'm going to do it. So I called back the same surgeon because I thought I've decided to go with that surgeon and I like the PA. And she said, right, I'll see if we've got space. And it just so happened they had a space for me quite quickly in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. I did book a consultation, so let's not skip that part. So I booked the consultation, I went in to see him. He was a nice enough guy. When I think back now, I didn't 100% click with him. He's a little bit, I don't know, a bit chauvinistic maybe. Okay. But he seemed to know what he was doing, and I asked him about breast implant illness. And he said, I've never had anybody back here to have their boobs taken out. Well, obviously he's done explants, but not for that reason. He said, I've had two people come back, but they were women that expressed concerns about breast implant illness. So he insinuated they manifested it. And he said, and there are social media groups as well. And he said, I believe that it is women jumping on a bandwagon. And he said, I am doing some research on it with a fellow surgeon. And I still to this day don't know how true it is. Now that I've done lots of research myself, his name has never popped up as somebody that's doing any research. And I think, to be honest, because he said that, I thought, right, okay. He believes in it to the point where he's researching it, but he's never seen it. So clearly it is very rare. And the PA was saying to me, I'll step away from the internet, stop Googling things. So what I decided to do was I'll just go around. I work in media, so there are breast implants aplenty in my workplace. There are a few of my friends have got them as well. So I thought, I'm just going to go around. I'm going to ask everyone that's got them. Oh, no, absolutely fine. Oh, my goodness, I love mine. They're amazing. And, oh, it'll be the best thing that you've ever done. And you should definitely go for it. And based on that, even though I knew about breast implant illness, I decided to go ahead. So the appointment in a few weeks came up and I was booked in. And, yeah, that was my date to have them in, which was something like the 20-something of January.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that particular, like the implant surgery and the recovery from that like for you?
I was still so nervous. It's as if my gut was saying, do not do it. And I will never not listen to my gut ever again, because I got up that morning to go for the surgery and I cried on the way to the hospital about half six in the morning, because we all had to be there at the same time. I was the first one down. And he came in and he said, are you sure? Because he knew that I was reluctant or whatever. And I said, yeah, okay, we're going to do this. Yeah, okay, let's go for it. And I went down, woke up, and I'm not sure how they did the anaesthetic in my implant operation, but he said to me, we do it in a special way and you're not going to be drowsy when you wake up. And I wasn't. I just woke up, bang, I was absolutely fine. Obviously, a little bit of pain in the boobie area, but no, I felt absolutely fine, to the point where I went back on air on the Monday, but I told work I'm pretty sure my boss won't listen to this, so I think we're safe to say. I told work that I had COVID. So I did my show from home because I've got a little studio at home. Yeah. So I just went back on air across my show covers about half the UK from my house, like on the Monday after I'd had it done on the Saturday lunchtime. So that's how my recovery was. Obviously, I couldn't do all of the getting things out of a top cupboard and all of the usual stuff. And I had my pillow, well, my friend's pillow from when she had it done, I slept upright. But in all honesty, the recovery from the operation was brilliant. I was absolutely, so happy with that.
There you go. What sort of size did you go to, and what were your thoughts on them when you had them done?
So I got 2.75. Well, no, actually, I asked for 2.75, but I got 2.85. It was only 10cc difference, but obviously now that I have them, they're in a cupboard upstairs, and I've got the little card and everything. They were 10cc more than I asked for. I should also say about the implants themselves, my surgeon used Mentor predominantly, but because my friend who had them put in had done loads of research, which she definitely didn't do now that I know more, she'd got the Rolls Royce of implants. And I didn't actually say the brand on our pod, but I will do. Yeah.
Go for it. I've said mine.
So I got the Motiva ones, which are the ones that have the little chip in them that are not, to my knowledge, still approved in the States. I remember my friend saying to me, they've got a little chip in them so that they can register things and keep a note. And at the time I remember going, all right, cool, without actually thinking, that's going inside your body.
If you get lost, can they take you to the vet and scan you? Like,
it's a bit like that, isn't it? But they say that the chips are the ones that go into pets. They're the same.
Is there a database that information gets saved?
I think it's a gimmick. It's a selling gimmick, whether they actually do anything.
This is our duty of care, and we're tracking to make sure you're okay. But like, are you going to then go to a surgeon and have them wave a wand at you and, like, you know, one of those chip reading wands? I've only seen them a couple of times on social media, and it's generally people posting to bring awareness to the fact that they exist. But I haven't actually spoken to somebody before who's had them. So
yeah, well, there you go. I think that if I had have had Mentor, I'd still be in exactly the same position now. I don't necessarily think, but my friend who has them displays so many symptoms, but she says it's not my tits. It's not, my hip pain. No, that's a sporting injury that won't get better. And
Why won't it get better? Yeah, exactly.
She's quite depressed at the moment as well. It's a difficult situation to be in because you don't want to come across as preachy, do you? But at the same time, I'm like, get the meds.
I only preached to someone today about it. Like, I was in a like athleisure wear shop, and I was I'm still struggling with a bit of fluid retention, and I can't wear anything too constrictive, like when it comes to crop tops and bras. So I was like mentioning that to her, like, you know, just tell everybody now. And we ended up talking about breast implant illness, and she was considering getting breast implants, and she had come across breast implant illness when she was searching for it, which I think is so good. It's such a big step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I was telling her all about it. She's like, you've actually like double convinced me not to get implants now, because she's like, people are saying to me, what if you're not one of the people that gets impacted by breast implant illness? She's like, but what if I am? And I'm like, she wants to get in. I think maybe she is in the fitness industry or wants to get into it. I'm like, you're not going to be able to do much when you're feeling like this. Like, but yeah, so no, preach all you want, I say.
And I think there are, as a result of your pod, as a result of my pod, as a result of everything that's on social media, it definitely, word is spreading about it. And I know that it's stopped a lot of people that I know from getting them that was considering. So yeah, I didn't even tell anybody that I was putting them in, apart from a few select friends that already had them. But I've literally told the world that I've had them out. And you know, you get some judgmental people saying, yeah, well, you shouldn't have done it to yourself in the first place. Oh, but equally, yeah. And I do, obviously nobody has actually voiced this to me because they wouldn't. I do feel like because I did mention breast implant illness to a lot of my friends with them, I think there are probably a few of them that think maybe I manifested it as well. And it's and they're saying, oh, it's not going to happen to me. She manifested it.
No, yeah. That's not how it works. So what were your symptoms and how soon, because your story is quite short with breast implants, and I think it's really important because it's not always 10 years like it was for me. You know, for you it was a shorter period of time. How quickly did those symptoms kick in for you?
Well, I think that initially, as far as the boobs were concerned, I was quite happy with it. I did find it weird. I found it really weird having things inside me, but I thought, oh, I'll get used to that. I did feel a lot sexier. I felt a bit like a blow-up doll, to be honest with you. But I've always found boobs quite sexy as somebody that never had them. So I did like the look of them. The first symptom was definitely the dry mouth, and I would do a lot of Googling of breast implant illness and dry mouth, and nothing really came up. I've seen quite a lot since then. But my tongue, it's really difficult to explain because people say dry mouth, but for me it was more just my tongue. That's what it felt like. It felt like I'd eaten like 10 really hot pizzas and
burnt your tongue all over.
Yeah. And then when I looked in the mirror, I think I spent a good 4 months just every time I looked in the mirror poking my tongue out to look at it, because I started off getting bumps at the back of my tongue, which I found really weird. Mm-hmm. And then it would go white, and then at times it would be green. It was pretty migging. But that was my first symptom. And I remember when I went back for the follow-up, I said to the surgeon, I've got a really dry mouth. Could it be something to do with the breast implants? And he pretty much laughed in my face because he knew that I was that person that had voiced concerns about breast implant illness. And here I was, and it's only been a few weeks, and now she's saying she's got a dry mouth, kind of like, oh, here we go, rolling the eyes kind of thing. He's like, no. No, it won't be. Just jump up on the bed and we'll take a look at your boobs.
That would have been hard because you're a radio host, so having a dry mouth would have impacted your work.
I can't even tell you. As it got worse over the next few months, I had I went through probably over 10 different mouthwashes. I had pastilles. I had sprays. I had a spray called Auralieve. I'm not sure if you get it over in Australia. There's a Auralieve, which is basically a saliva spray, and at one point it was so bad that I couldn't even speak on the radio without spraying my mouth first because my mouth was too clicky. It was too and I couldn't do it. That coupled with the fact that my brain fog was so bad that I had to write down everything that I was going to say. I've been on the radio since I was 17 and I've never had to do that. But I didn't know where I was going with. I was just in this cloud of shitness. Sorry. Before I move on to my symptoms that I've written down here, well, I wrote down last year, I'll talk about the cyst, which I find really interesting because I was listening to another one of your episodes. I can't remember who it was with, but they were talking about cysts. But I found at Easter. So if you bear in mind, I had them put in the January, and we were due to go away for Easter to Florida with the kids. And the week before I went, I found lumps in my boobs, and I'd never had anything like that, so obviously freaking out. And so I went back to the surgeon and they said, oh, no problem, we'll have a look at that, and didn't mention the fact they were going to charge me £360 to actually just look at it. I didn't find that out until after. I thought, oh, they're being so helpful. No, they're gonna charge you for this. And so They said, oh, it's just cysts, and the chances are that your implant just pushed them out. That's what it is. But before I'd actually had the scan, my surgeon said, I've never seen anything like this before, which I thought, oh, brilliant. So, and then I had a scan on the NHS because we have the wonderful NHS over here, of course, free, and got them checked there as well. And they actually drained one of them, what the bigger ones. And I would love to go back to that breast clinic now in hindsight to just say to them, is this common with women with implants?
Mm.
Because I don't believe that, because I didn't really have anything. And I did used to check myself for lumps, as we're all supposed to.
Yeah.
And there was never anything like that before I had those implants put in. And it's hard now, obviously, because my boobs are still recovering. It's been nearly a year. And obviously, you're probably the same. You've got your nipple and the bit surrounding that. It's not fully round like it used to be. I can tell it's been chopped into a little bit. And I know that he struggled to get some off my rib cage on one side. So it's difficult to tell with lumps and bumps. But so, yeah. So then I went away to Florida with the driest mouth that whilst we were in Florida, the holiday of a lifetime, I got oral thrush the whole time. So we were walking around Disney and I had the most horrendously disgusting mouth and could only taste metal. And
God.
Yeah. So I actually started drinking again on that holiday. I haven't been drinking since the start of COVID because my hangovers were so bad because my detox pathways are shit, but we'll get onto that later. So the symptoms that I had, dry mouth, tinnitus, was much worse. I've always had it a bit because I've worn headphones and was a raver and used to hug speakers. But it got much worse, like beep, as soon as I woke up in the morning. God. I just felt tired all the time. As soon as I woke up in the morning, I was so groggy. I felt sick. I had a wave of sickness come over me every morning when I woke up. The brain fog was horrific. I hope that when I get to menopause, that doesn't come back to that intensity, because I'd forget everything. That I just forget everything. And I had an ongoing mild cough as well. My eyesight deteriorated to the point where I got glasses that I only put on occasionally when I do video calls now. I don't use them at all otherwise. When I had the boobs in for the last couple of months, I was wearing them all the time. Dry skin. My skin on my face was so ridiculously dry that I was putting moisturizer on about 3 or 4 times a day, and every time I put it on, it felt like it sucked into my skin and then it was dry again. My eyes were constantly bloodshot. I had lower back pain on my right side. My constipation, which I've always suffered with, again, detox pathways, that was much, much worse. I had bloating before I explanted. I had numb fingers as well on this hand. It was really weird. Heart palpitations. I had quite a few episodes of heart palpitations. I had to pull over on the way to work once because they just came out of nowhere. And I had a panic attack when we got back from Florida, which I think was probably brought on by jet lag and the breast implants. But I've never had anything like that before. And my heart was racing. And I was saying to my husband, I think I need to go to hospital. And it was quite intense. Sweating at night as well. I would wake up in the morning and my pajamas would be absolutely soaking wet. I was covered in sweat. I'm not really a very sweaty person because of detox pathways, I think. But yeah, I used to sweat a lot at night, and my hair was like straw and falling out a little bit as well. So they are the symptoms that I got within 6 months of having them.
That's crazy. That's a lesson for anyone that's listening who has implants or hasn't had them yet, that it doesn't take years for some people. I've spoken to others who have had certain things happening within short periods of time as well, but like not this quick.
Yeah.
So it's possible. Like, you know, your body was just like, get these out. Like, I don't want them here.
Yeah. And I think the warning signs were there when we talk about detox pathways, and I want to do a little bit more work on mine because I still do suffer from constipation. We do overshare on these pods, don't we?
That's what we're here for.
but my hangovers, that was why I stopped drinking at the end of COVID, because my hangovers are just absolutely horrific to the point where I can have one glass of wine and then I just have a shit day the next day. I just don't feel right the next day. Yeah. And so my detox pathways are obviously blocked with that. When I do exercise, I don't sweat loads like a normal human. I just go a bit red in the face, really. And I've spoken to a few ladies that were like that. So my body was holding on to all of these toxins, and I was just getting more and more ill over a very short space of time.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about the detox pathways?
I mean, for me, I need to learn more about it, I think, because I know that there are a lot of ladies that they get in touch with naturopaths and stuff, and I think maybe I need to do that as well. Yeah, I know that you did, because I always think that, oh, I've got on top of the being bunged up situation, and then something happens and then I'm not anymore. But I ate exactly the same thing today as I did that day when I went perfectly fine. And I read things online saying you need to be going 3 times a day, and I'm like, what? Oh good, that's not normal then.
No, it's only been normal for me while I've been working with a naturopath on detoxing. So like the heavy metal detox I've done with her, there's now like I'm doing like a bit of a gut health thing. So we've spoken before, I think we both suffer from IBS, again oversharing, but the conversation I had with my naturopath was a very high percentage of people who are, it's not even really diagnosed with IBS. Mine was like went to a dietitian, and I said to her, I'm reacting really badly to garlic and cashews, and I can't have broccoli or cauliflower without fighting the house down, like, you know, and she was like, look, let's cancel out a few of those things and see if you feel better. And then when I did, she's like, you've got IBS. So it's not even really something that they can diagnose. Like, I don't think they can do a colonoscopy and diagnose IBS. Like, I think it's like you know, process of elimination type thing. But the naturopath said to me that a lot of people who actually have told they've got IBS actually have SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which I'm working with her on with her now. But I'm pooping 3 times a day some of the days, but like not normally, like it's one or two, like one I'm like celebrating, but you have to go 3 times a day. Some people do, like one of my friends has a really fast metabolism, she's quite slim naturally, and I remember going away with her on a working holiday and we shared a cabin, so you know everything that's going on in a small cabin or something. We only knew each other for 6 months. I'm like, you poop so much, but she's that's just her body. Yeah, everyone's different, I guess.
I think after going through all of this and realizing how important it is to detox, which it's just something that I never really thought about before. I've been gluten free for years now. When I was pregnant with my first son, I ended up in hospital because I started bleeding because I was quite heavily pregnant and I was so constipated that there was just too much going on there.
Oh my God.
And from that moment, I decided to try gluten free, and it seemed to work a bit better. And I take some supplements to help me out, and probiotics. And although I've only been taking probiotics since a month before I explanted, because I've read about how great they were. And I must say that the probiotics did make me feel, they did alleviate my symptoms a bit before I explanted, kinda. I mean, I still felt like I was dying, as is often talked about. That's the other thing that when I was reading about breast implant illness before I actually had them put in, I remember reading, you feel like you're dying. And I remember thinking, stop it, so dramatic. And it was actually one of the things that made me think, oh, this is nonsense.
That
you feel like you're dying. And I'd show the list of symptoms to my husband, and he said, well, I've got about 3 of those. And that's how, you know, I talked myself into it by thinking that breast implant illness was nonsense. And that's why I'm at this point now, having released 2 series of a podcast, because I was angry that everyone convinced me, and it's not their fault. I took it on board. All right, okay, it is rare. I feel like it's my job now to put it out there, and it's so that other people don't go through the same thing. It's not rare at all. I think it's much more common than people think.
That's it. And like you were saying with what your husband said when he looked at the list of symptoms, so many of the symptoms, and I say this time and time again, can be attributed to other things. So like if I were in your situation and waking up sweaty, I'd be like, oh, maybe I'm going through early menopause. And you know, for me, there was like the joint pain. I was like, oh, I'm like a little bit stressed. I'm doing CrossFit. Maybe my body's not recovering well because I'm a bit overloaded. CrossFit, they do talk about adrenal fatigue quite a bit because it's such a high stress workout on the body. And a lot of people will eventually down the track go through adrenal fatigue. And they don't just do CrossFit by halves. You don't do a couple of times a week. You go six times a week, plus do this, plus do that. And so I was like, oh, maybe that's what's going on with my body. But that's a lot of us do that because so many of the symptoms can be something else. You're tired.
Well, that's it. You know. And I am menopause age. So I don't think I'm quite there yet as far as symptoms go, but I am of that age. So I was on the phone to this PA saying, listen, I've got a really dry mouth and this and that. And she'd say, it's menopause, sweetie. Dry mouth is a menopause symptom. And she was so adamant. And I could, as much as initially when I started speaking to her, I was like, oh, she's really lovely. But I just think it was all a bit of a show now, really. I could tell when she was talking to me, she was rolling her eyes at the same time. Oh, here we go. It's that girl that was worried about breast implant illness. And here she is saying she's got breast implant illness. Ridiculous. But then I just thought, no, come on. I'm an intelligent woman here. I wasn't intelligent enough to you know, do more research than I did, but it's too much of a coincidence. I'm sorry, I had breast implants put in 6 weeks ago and now this stuff started happening to me. That's not menopause happening. This is something else. When we got back from Florida, I just got progressively worse. And then we had this sounds like I go on loads of holidays, but I don't, but we had a weekend in Tenerife in the Canary Islands. And for that weekend, I felt fine. And I don't know whether that was because it was really hot and I was sweating it out a bit more. Mm-hmm. But for a couple of days, I felt fine and my mouth wasn't that dry. But then I got back and because when we were in Tenerife, I said to my husband, oh, I thought I was going to have them out. You'd be devastated, wouldn't you, if I had to have them out? And he said, absolutely devastated. And he's always regretted saying that one. but when we got back, I think it was about May, we went to Tenerife. We got back and, yeah, I started doing more research at that point because obviously I was feeling awful. And I knew they had to come out. I found a video online. There's a, I don't know if you will have heard of S Club 7, a pop group.
Yeah. Oh my God. I grew up listening to them. Yeah.
Oh, really? Really? I didn't know how big they were outside the UK. But Hannah from S Club 7, you know, mm-hmm. that she had breast implant illness and she right. had them out. Yeah. Okay. So she's actually done a program. It was just before Christmas, I think, over here. And she did a full program on it. Fair play to her. It wasn't on a brilliant channel. So not everyone knew about it, but yeah, but she had done an interview on This Morning, a show on the TV over here years ago, probably about 2016 or something, whenever after she'd had them out. And in her interview, she just talked about her symptoms and she said that when they were touring, they gave her certain drugs that made her feel better temporarily. But then she started going downhill to the point where she had to sleep downstairs because she couldn't walk up the stairs anymore and she was really, really ill. And in the end, it was her partner who said to her, do you think it could be this? And then she went on a journey to obviously getting them out. And I showed my husband the video and I said, this is absolutely what is happening to me. And if I leave these things inside me, it's just going to get worse and they need to go. And actually saying that, I always hear people on your podcast getting upset and I thought, oh, I won't get upset. But that's made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up because as I was saying it to him, I was crying. And obviously, like so many ladies that go through this, I cried a lot, mostly on my own, apologizing to my body when I was going through it. But I was trying to make him see. Because I think for a while, I do think he was one of those that thought, oh, she was talking about it before and now here we are and it's happening. And I fully understand. I fully understand why people would doubt me because I talked about it before. But I think at that point he realised and I'd get up early, come down to this kitchen table to do some work and he'd come down and I'd just be head on the table. Because I just felt absolutely awful and he did say I was quite hard to live with. Sorry about that. But I was quite hard to live with when I was going through it because I'm usually quite a happy-go-lucky person, aside from occasional times of the month. But I was just miserable all the time. I was absolutely miserable. And the anxiety I felt about the whole thing, I was just on edge. I know that anxiety is a big part of it, and obviously that it builds more when you realize what's going on and you just want to have them out. But I just felt awful, and I knew that they needed to come out.
So when did you make that decision, and how did you go about selecting a surgeon? Because I'm making a total assumption here that you didn't go back to the original implanting surgeon.
So by this time, I'd kind of distracted myself. I needed to distract myself from how bad I felt by doing something. So by this time, I was fully on the research bus. I'd joined the Facebook group 4 months too late, but I joined the Facebook group. I'd decided I wanted to do a podcast. I'd found my co-host, Abby Eastwood. Weirdly, we used to work at a radio station together, but we never met years and years ago. So I already knew her name, and we have lots of mutual friends. But I found her online because she presented a dispatches show for Channel 4 over here on the subject in 2016. She was also the person who started the UK Facebook group. So she was quite a big deal. And she was reluctant at first because she didn't want to drag it all up again, because it was all consuming for quite a while for her. But I convinced her. So by this point, I'd already decided we were doing the pod. So I thought, I need to go back to my surgeon because I want to see what he's going to say. Okay. I knew that I wasn't going to go to him. But anyway, it turns out if I wanted to go back to him, they didn't have space for me for 7 months, unfortunately.
Wait, so 6 months before they could get you in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. So seven months. And, you know, I was still going to go back to him and talk to him for the pod. But by that point, I was so ill, I couldn't face it. I didn't have the fight to do that, to go in there. And I was, I looked like a crack addict. I'd lost all of the volume on my face. I just needed to get, I was still working. My focus every day was to get to the end of the show at 4 o'clock and just get home so I could basically sit on the sofa or go to bed.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the fight. So I booked some consultations, and a lot of the surgeons that are on the Facebook group, like Guy Stern and a few others, there's a long waiting list even for a consultation, and that's without even getting your date in for the explant surgery.
Yeah.
But I found Jed. He was on the group and he'd had a cancellation. So I went to see him and I loved him. Oh my God, such a lovely man. In the way that I said to you, when I saw my initial surgeon, I was a bit like, do I like you? I'm not sure. Jed, oh my God, he's just such a lovely, lovely man and so genuinely interested in breast implant illness and has done lots of work on it and has explanted lots of ladies and seen loads of ladies get better. And even now he's emailing me saying, how's the pod going? And if there's anything I can do to help. And yeah, so, and he's not bothered about putting himself out there because he's retiring soon and he just doesn't care. He just wants, in fact, he said that when he retires, he's going to put more effort into this and researching this, and he has genuine interest. That's so amazing. I thought, because I loved him so much, I booked in with him, and he had a slot in like a month's time. So yeah, I booked in with him, and on the day of that surgery I was practically skipping and jumping to that hospital. It was the complete opposite to when the journey to have them in. I knew absolutely that I was doing the right thing. I was still nervous about having an operation. I'm the mum of two boys, and that was obviously a big thing for me when I had them in as well. And I knew I was, you know, having a big operation for the second time in 6 months, and I knew that this was a big operation because of the capsule, and he was going to take the capsule, and Guy Stern had already said to me, the brand of implant that you've got, the capsule takes a long time to form around it. So he said, so I don't think that you should have the surgery until early next year. You need to keep them in for a year. But I ignored that advice. Sorry, Guy. I ignored that advice because I just couldn't keep them in. I felt too ill, and it was getting to the point where it was going to stop me working. Yeah. Because I just couldn't function at all. No. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. So especially the brain fog, like not being able to get through a, you know, a radio, like hosting a radio show. Like I couldn't get through a sentence without going, yeah. What was I saying? Like, and that's not even my job. Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So I booked the week off work this time. I didn't lie and say I had COVID or anything.
Yeah. The podcast is out.
Yeah. And also by this point, I thought, I'm not going to miraculously feel better after this because I'm too ill. My body is so run down. It's a different story to when they went in. I was super healthy to a point, you know, still IBS and stuff, but super healthy when they went in. And I recovered quickly, but this is a different story. So I booked it. Actually, I didn't book the full week off. What did I tell? I did lie. I told my boss I was having some kind of other operation. I was having a cyst removed or something from my ovaries or something. I don't know. So it was on a day-by-day basis with my boss as to when I was going back. But I was chatting to some of the nurses in the hospital and they said, what one of them said to me, I was thinking about having implants until I worked here, but now I've seen so many cases that there's absolutely no way I would do it. She said that there was one girl that was in, and from the day she had her implants put in, she didn't have a period at all. And then on the day that she had them out, she got a period.
Wow.
And she'd had them in for about 7 years or something, I think she said.
So she'd
seen so many cases that there is absolutely no way. And I said, I'm doing a podcast. And she said, oh, I want to know more about it. And I always kick myself for not getting her number to get her on the podcast because she would have been great. So yeah, I had the operation and I woke up. It's weird, you know, because I stayed in overnight this time. I was out within hours in the other place.
Mm.
I felt different when I woke up. There was definitely something. It was like something had lifted, but I was so groggy, like the complete opposite. The anaesthetic was done in the normal way.
Yeah.
So I was groggy, but I woke up knowing I'd absolutely done the right thing. Yeah, and there was relief. I think it was a sense of relief over my body. My body relaxed. And I felt better, but groggy from the anaesthetic. Yeah.
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 How soon after the surgery did you start to see improvements?
I think the boobs themselves, I didn't have drains. Jed doesn't really believe in drains. I know that there are different schools of thought on that. But I did end up with one massive boob and one little tiny, very sad looking boob that was just pointing down and like, oh, what's gone on? The other one looked like the implant was still in it. It was crazy. But that did eventually, the swelling went down, obviously. I think that I did a little montage video, and on that video, it was a week after, and I'm sat there saying, oh my God, I feel amazing. I'm bouncing off the walls with energy because all of my energy had come back and the colour had come back into my face. And yeah, I was bouncing off the walls and I couldn't believe it. And I just kept saying, my mind is blown by this. Oh my God, this is mind blowing. What the hell? I can't believe it. And it just made me want to do the podcast more and more. I think looking at my symptoms, I did still have the dry mouth until, I was going to say February, but over the past couple of days I've had a little bit of a dry mouth, but it's nowhere near what it was. The tinnitus is quite bad at the moment as well, but it went for a while. The brain fog, gone, that lifted pretty much straight away. And the feeling groggy in the morning, the sweating at night, heart palpitations, no more numb fingers, no more lower back pain. My skin felt immediately better. I think that was one of the first things that I noticed in that hospital bed when I woke up from the operation. I just, oh my God, what's going on here? It's like all of the oil has suddenly come back into
that
my
was
skin.
The same
this
as
is
me
crazy.
Within days. I was like I am quite an oily person and my forehead looked oily. I'm like, wait, like this used to be regular, like a regular occurrence for me. And I just got used to not having oily skin. And then suddenly my, like, I think, is it sebum? I don't know what it's called. But like the oil started coming back straight, like within days, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. It just bounced back straight away.
It's bloody crazy, crazy. And I think I said to you, I think when I was recording that video, I thought I am miraculously 100% better. But then we went on holiday a couple of weeks later.
What, another holiday?
Yes. Went on holiday, went away with my parents, and there were quite a few times when I would have to sit down and my mum would say, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" Like panicking, obviously, that I'm still there. And I said, "Oh, I just feel really sick, but it will pass." And it did. So I had the waves, as everybody does.
Yes.
When we started recording the pod in the September, so I had them out on the 31st of July. We started recording the pod in the September. I was still coughing quite a bit. It was a nightmare to edit. Editing out all of these coughs all the time. So I was still coughing. Like I say, the dry mouth still lingered. I remember going away. I go away every year with all of my old school friends. And I mentioned having a dry mouth, and my friend who was still thinking about having implants, she jumped on it and said, "Ah, you've still got a dry mouth," as if to say it wasn't your boobs, because she was the one that got in touch with me after I had them out saying, "Do you regret it?" And I said, "Mate, if there is one thing I will never regret in my life, it is having those things out. Maybe having them put in the first place, but not having them out."
Not having them
because
out.
They live down, I went to school down south and I live up north now. So they didn't see how bad I was. They had no idea how bad it got and how ill I looked towards the end of it. So, and one of my school friends has another one has got implants, and she says she's absolutely fine, but she has got hair loss and she has got gut issues. And then my friend who had them put in, she the one that convinced me, she has got joint pain and she is depressed. And my trans friend, and I completely get it with my trans friend, she says she'll never ever have them out no matter how ill she gets, and I get that because it's her identity, but she has constant sinus infections. And she said that she has heart palpitations as well, and she gets brain fog. So this is why now when I go back and I speak to or I see all of those women who said to me before I got them in, "Oh no, I'm absolutely fine." Even my brother's girlfriend, who had a new set put in this Easter, she has been quite poorly since then, but she said to me, "Oh, actually, I've got a friend who took them out because she was poorly." And I was like, "Why don't you tell me that before? Why are you telling me that now? You're telling me that every person, I'm not even joking, every person that I speak to about the podcast, they know someone. We went down south to see my husband's friends and she said, "Oh, one of the school mums constantly gets migraines. Do you think it could be her implants?" My neighbour, "My sister gets a lot of headaches. Do you think it could be her implants?" Just this weekend, I met someone for the first time. "What is your podcast about?" "Oh, breast implant illness." "Oh, my friend had hers out because she said that they made her depressed and gave her anxiety." There are so many stories. There are so many stories.
And I guess for those people, like this school friend that sort of said, "Ah, like you've got the dry mouth," that's probably why a lot of people don't talk about it, because you will have people that jump on and try to find a way to be like, "Oh no, it wasn't them." In like, but like you were saying before, and I'm similar, like the slow detox. Mine's actually that I think I spoke with you and Abby about it on the podcast episode I jumped on yours, that MTHFR gene mutation, which a lot of people in the BII world are talking about. I wouldn't have heard about that unless I was following people on social media. Like I think there was a certain surgeon who in the US who had an intern who was doing a study on breast implant illness and that gene mutation. But yeah, like that's what's possibly causing my healing to take so much longer. And like, you know, we were talking about this before we jumped on, we're a similar amount of time away from our explants, but there's still the wave of it happening. And I got to the 9 month mark, and mine was when I had traveled back from the US, which is 21 hours of flights, like 3 flights to get home, I think it was. And like, I felt terrible by the time I got home, felt really horrible. And it was through seeing a naturopath for me that got me like healing, my next stage of healing, because I think I'd reached a certain amount of it that I could do without the help of a professional and starting to heal again now. There's like this next phase of it, which I'm really, really grateful for, because it was very disheartening to get home and be so swollen and have like some pain through my ankles again and like retaining a lot of fluid. Like I'd go for a walk and my hands would get puffy. Like what's going on here?
Yeah. So yeah, I think I want to do that. I need to find a good one here and look into it more, because I feel amazing now. I probably feel better than I ever felt before, because I don't drink now. I'm taking better care of myself. I'm better with what I eat. I exercise every day. I honestly feel fantastic. The only thing that I need to sort out really is my you know, IBS. Is I still can't seem to quite get on top of it, but I feel like, especially since doing the podcast, listening to your episodes as well, I feel like there was a big question mark over why did I get it at the time that I got it. But I honestly feel like I just know now. I've had genetic testing and it didn't come back saying I had that gene.
Okay.
It did come back saying I was deficient in a few other things, and constipation came up as a big thing, which I thought, right, okay, clearly this knows its shit. Quite actually.
Literally.
So I'm supplementing now for the things that I was missing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do honestly feel that the reason that I reacted so violently is because my detox pathways are just not as good as the average human. I can't deal with the hangovers. I'm not detoxing properly through my bottom. And
sweating
all of that. So it's just something that I need to keep on top of now if I want to live a long life and be healthy. And in that way, I'm kind of grateful for the whole experience. Now, I know not a lot of people would say this, because I know that it's affected a lot of the ladies that we speak to for 10, 15, 20 years. But for me, it was 6 months. So it was 6 months of my life. And I would say the full recovery is probably until now. I would say it's taken a full year to recover from 6 months. Because I went through a stage this Easter of looking like a corpse again and all this, and I bought myself a red light banner and all of this kind of stuff. But I don't regret it for that reason, because as much as I did spend 15,000 English pounds in 6 months, which isn't great, I've learned so much, and I'm so proud of the podcast that I've done with Abby, and I'm just proud of everything that's come out of it. And, you know, we're going to try and PR it here in the UK in September after the school holidays and see what comes of that. But the great thing about a podcast, as you know, is that you do it and it's there forever, and it's a source of information. And before, I think that you'd already started doing your podcast. There were maybe a few episodes out when we started doing, or when I started to look at us doing a podcast, but other than that, there wasn't anything dedicated to breast implant illness. Only people doing episodes about it on other health podcasts,
and there were generally like that was what I came across as well, like that. And I think it was great that they were doing that, but they were generally influencers or famous people, and that's what I sort of thought, oh, maybe I should just share my story from start to finish, because then just the regular Joe who's going through this could connect with somebody and like know that they're not on their own, which, you know, was part of what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people through this without like, you know, I've got a full-time job during the week, so I don't have the time to sit down and consult with people. Plus, I'm not qualified to do that. But if I can put out a bit of a podcast that goes, hey, this is my experience, this is what helps me, and that then evolved to telling the stories of other women, because I got to a point where I was like, well, there's not really much else I can give you unless you want to hear just about like every other day in my life, which is boring. So let's get these people on to share their stories. And that's then, providing people. There's a little nugget of gold that comes from every episode, whether it is a new symptom. Like you mentioning heart palpitations, as much as I've heard them from other people, I actually did experience them a few years ago. And that was my body, because that stopped after I had an ovarian cyst removed. So I don't know whether my body was warning me about a few things that were going on and I was a bit overloaded. But, you know, that's another thing that I can add to my list that I had ages ago. It wasn't consistent. But, where people are sort of listening in and they're learning a new symptom or a new thing that they can do to prepare for the surgery or a new thing that they can be mindful of after the surgery, then my job here is done. Like that's exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you say there about your body warning you, because we talk about that on the pod as well, with especially with my tinnitus, which, like I say, I still have, but I do wear headphones all the time and I have music quite loud, and you know that I'm in quite a loud environment, so I've always had a little bit of tinnitus. But at the time that I had the boobs in, I would wake up beep and we say it's like an alarm going off inside your body, I'm not okay in here, and you must listen to your body. And once you're in tune with your body, I know it sounds a bit hippie, but you can help it and you can work together. And that's how I feel about it now. I'm not going to, I've got small boobs, so what? I've actually come out of this okay. They look fine. They look pretty much how they looked before they went in. They were only in for 6 months. They recovered quickly. I'm gonna stop hating on it. My God, I just want it to be healthy so that we can, you know, live to a ripe old age and I can see my grandchildren.
Yeah. Are there any, you were saying before about like the fact that you're exercising, you're eating well, are there any other lifestyle changes that you feel like you've had to make since explanting? Like some people can't be around perfume. Some people, like I've stopped using as many chemicals when I'm cleaning the house. Is there anything that you've found that you've needed to do or that you've wanted to do lifestyle wise that you've changed?
In all honesty, I don't think I had them in long enough for them to affect me in that way. As ill as they made me, I don't think it has affected me in that way. Personally, I am more natural and holistic with the way that I approach things. I haven't gone as far as cleaning products yet. I need to look into that. But I had my filling changed from a metal filling. And the other thing is, I just don't believe everything that we're told anymore. If we went through the whole COVID thing again, I wouldn't have a vaccination now.
Same.
I just wouldn't. I just think that a lot of it is about money and there's not necessarily enough care that goes into us at all. I think in a lot of situations we are guinea pigs for a lot of the things that happen. So I'm much more wary now than I've ever been before about things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of us are. Yeah, definitely. What do you wish you knew about breast implants before getting them?
Everything. Oh God. I think that the information now, for I had them in January last year, and the information is there. There's just, don't let anybody tell you to step away from the internet and then go, all right then. We try and come from the angle that we don't want to tell people not to have them, but I want to tell people not to have them. And I want everybody that I know to not have them, because they're not good for you in any way whatsoever. They are going to deteriorate over time. You're never going to be living your best life with those things inside you. So just don't get them. Don't do it.
Exactly. And that aside as well, like the fact that you need to get them replaced every 10 to 15 years, you're then setting yourself. And that's one thing that I thought of when I was getting them at 19. Like, am I going to be 85 and still getting my breast implants replaced? Like, how is this going to work? And that's one thing. Like, you're setting yourself up for having, you know, you try to avoid surgery as much as possible. That's why we attempt healthier lifestyles and that kind of thing.
I actually said that to my initial surgeon about being a little old lady on the operating table. And he said to me, if there's nothing wrong with them, you can have them in for the rest of your life.
What?
So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
There's so many different, I'm having one of those moments, like, because you do hear about, like, my surgeon did tell me 10 to 15 years they'd need replacing. I've heard of other people saying as well, like, oh yeah, you can just leave them in like forever. The very first, I'm doing some research at the moment into the history of breast augmentation, and the very first woman who had breast implants, I think it was 1962, she was in Texas, she still has that original set in now.
Wow.
As far as I'm aware. So, like, you know, you do hear of that happening, but then when you see the photos of the ones that have been in for 30 years, like the capsule is like dark and it's hard and it's thick. Like the body's just been like fighting and trying to protect you from those implants for so long. So.
Yeah, you see the videos, don't you, of them coming out, and they're disgusting. But my friend actually sent me a link to an article that's in one of the newspapers here today, and it's basically saying that when you die, if you've got breast implants, they're just there. So eventually you will be in it. It's a bit morbid, this. You will be in a coffin and it will be bones with two breast implants.
With silicone implants sitting on top.
But I said to my friend, to me, that is kind of an advert for them, because people reading that will think, yeah, because they last forever. We know that when they're in the body, there's degradation. I can usually say that word.
You did it.
It's Abby that trips up over it. but yeah, it's so I said, I think that article is basically an advert for them, because there are comments underneath it from women saying, oh good, well I paid a lot of money for these beauties, I want to know that they're going to last. And
comment on every single one, like, just go and listen to my podcast. Like
I did do that for a bit. There was there's a girl who is on, well, she used to be on one of the soaps over here, can't remember her name right now. Anyway, she obviously got them done for free. So she was all over social media parading her new boobies around, and everybody said, oh my God, they look amazing, and oh, I want to get this done. And then there were quite a few comments from ladies talking about breast implant illness, and I posted the link and stuff like that, which part of me felt a little bit bad for intruding on her post about her nice new titties. But at the end of the day, stop promoting shit like that, love. You got it done for free, and that's why you're doing it. But no, it's not good. You don't want to encourage people to do things like that.
So if you could go back to yourself, you know, 18 or so months ago, before you had implants put in, what would you tell her?
I would tell her to, you know, the usual, love yourself as you are. But I honestly don't think I would be in this headspace without going through what I went through, which is not me telling people to do it. But for me personally, because it was only a 6 month long journey, I don't think I would have been in the headspace that I'm in now without going through it. I'd probably tell her to research more rather than just accepting that you should step away from the internet and believing everybody who says they're fine, who I now know clearly are not. They're just attributing their symptoms to other things. I remember even having the thought before I had them put in, you're going to be menopausal soon, you need to be careful because some of these symptoms are like menopause symptoms and you won't know where you stand with it. I'm just so glad that they're not in now, so I haven't got that confusion, because I honestly think that there will be so many women that think they've got menopausal symptoms and will be going through all sorts of different attempts at HRT and nothing is happening because it isn't that. So I'm just so pleased that they're not in as I head into this crappy stage of life that us ladies have to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. One last question for you. How can anyone that's listening today follow along with first your podcast and also your own story?
You could follow our Instagram page, which is The Heal Is Real Podcast, or search The Heal Is Real Podcast on all of the platforms. The link is on the bio of our page on Instagram as well. And if you have a story to tell, do get in touch. We're still assessing at the moment whether we are actually going to do a third series. I think the way that we're looking at it is because we're trying to change legislation in the UK. So, because at the moment there isn't a legal requirement for the surgeons to tell ladies, it's just a guidance. So I think at the moment we're thinking we're going to try and PR it in September, and then we're going to just see what happens. So I think that if there are ladies that want to tell their story, I will be pushing them in your direction for the time being. So, but we work as a team and we're in this together, you know, at the end of the day. That's it's the more awareness, the better, in my opinion. The more podcasts, the more awareness, the more Instagram pages, the more ladies that are sharing their stories, the better. So let's do this and get the word out there as much as we can.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for everything that you and Abby are doing with the podcast, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for what you're doing as well. Mutual Appreciation Society. Thank you.
Thank you. This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_ii_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.